We're going to open the public hearing on 3164. Paul, you'll get 15 minutes, and DiLorenzo will get 15 minutes. That's the deal, okay?
Am I wearing the red trunk?
Whatever you want to do, but I don't care.
We'd rather
the clock will start as soon as you hit that seat, and I expect you to get in there pretty quick. We have a lot of stuff to do. Actually almost have 16. That hand gets about to 9.
The big hand gets...
I'm ready. When the big hand gets... I just want to be straight. When the big hand gets to the...
Good morning.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I'm here representing the city of North Plains. With me is the city manager from North Plains, Don Otterman. We're going to tag team this, so both of us will be speaking about at the same time. I'm simply going to provide color commentary, and Don will actually do the play-by-play. We have a few little diagrams and stuff to show you, and then we'll open it up to questions. There are other people in the audience who are available to answer any specific questions if anything arises. We have the attorney for the city of North Plains who does the real legal stuff. I do the pretend legal stuff. And we also have some folks who have interests in various property. We have also back here some folks who have land to the south, which is not being brought into the city, who are in favor of what the city wishes to do. But we'll explain that on the map in just a second. Anyway, I'm going to have Don come up there. I'm going to play Vanna White to a little slight degree. I'll set up the easel. And Don wants to actually walk around, but if you want to introduce the thing, like that, please, because we're on a limited time.
As again, my name is Don Otterman. I'm city manager of the city of North Plains. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. To give you a quick background, the city of North Plains in 1997 received a grant from the Transportation Growth Management Program to study the potential growth for the city. This was after one attempt to expand the urban growth boundary, which was remanded back from the court. The CGM program made the grant award to the city. There was a committee formed that was made up of city representatives of Friends of North Plains, of Washington County, Metro, and over a period of a year, year and a half, they developed a plan for the future growth of the community. That plan recommended that the growth of the city be to the north and to the east. In 1997, we began our periodic review process. We are still in periodic review, but the first work task of our periodic review process was to converge the recommendations of the TPM study into our comprehensive plan. In other words, implement the recommendations of that TGM study into our comprehensive plan. If it's okay with the committee, I'd like to go up to the easel and point out a few things to the committee that make it a little bit more easy to understand, I think.
And speak up as loud as you can.
Okay.
Don't have a mic over there. Thank you.
The area of the current city is in the salmon color. The area that sticks out to the east is our one of our larger industrial areas. The areas that are in the yellow and the goldenrod are areas that at a point in the future will be incorporated into the city limits. The concept behind this plan is that we use hard boundaries to establish our future limits of the city. To the south, we have Highway 26. To the west, we have Gordon Road and some drainage areas. To the north is the Pumpkin Ridge Golf Course. This area to the northeast is all floodplain, and to the east is Jackson School Road. And then there's a country farm to the south of this boundary here. The idea behind the plan is to incorporate the recommendations of the TPM study. As you see, we have areas that are in sort of a goldenrod color. these are the expansion areas that are proposed for the first 20-year expansion. The idea behind the plan and in most land use planning is that the central core is the higher density of the community. And then as the community develops out, it gets lower and lower density. The reason that we are showing these goldenrod areas, one of the reasons is that we're going to be providing a diverse mixture of housing, and that we would have higher density housing next to the community on the north, lower density housing east of the community. Then as the community grows, we would backfill in from east back into the downtown area and get a higher density as we go. And the north, the growth would become a lower density growth. So it's a mixture of housing densities. This area to the east is also incorporated into the growth because there is an existing water line and sewer line out West Newman Road that will serve this property. There's no additional water or sewer line necessary to construct. As you go back towards the town, topography changes, and a large part of this area that is to the west cannot be served by the existing sewer line. Also, a large part of this is also in floodplain. And so it makes more sense to utilize the existing infrastructure. And this area also to the east is the lowest value of all farmland in the entire area. This is class 4 soil. Everything to the north and to the south is all class 1 and class 2 soil. And based upon the parameters of state law, we try to take in the lower value farmland first. One of the things about North Carolina is that we're surrounded by farmland. So regardless of which way we go, we're going to end up going onto some type of farmland. To the north, we face the grassland, to the east of the grassland. To the south, while the south area, and I can use this area for the range. So the south area, this triangular area here. Well, it's a second area. A majority of this majority of it is being farmed. And
it's this one right there,
more per acre than the north and the east area. So it gets a higher value farmland than the north and the east area, although it is designated as second land. One of the problems of going south of the highway, besides dividing our residential area by currently 4-lane highway, in the future up to an 8-lane highway, is that the area to the south has a private airstrip that bisects the area on a diagonal basis. It has a large group of houses around the airstrip that have hangars that utilize the airstrip. There is a seed washing facility located south of the highway. So there's a mixture of uses that would be very difficult to develop around. You would end up, actually, if you were to develop the way it is right now with the private airstrip, we would not only have a highway dividing our city and our residential areas, we would have an airstrip dividing our residential areas. And from land use planning perspective, this does not make sense. This is exception land. State law says that you look at exception land first as far as expansion of your program. We have done that. We have made findings that the exception land is not adequate for our expansion needs for residential. We have gone through the process through DLCD and LCDC and have actually gotten material from LCDC to expand the north and to the east. They feel that we've made the findings necessary. However, there is a very big argument as to whether or not state law is as LCDC interprets it. And that decision will probably be the appeal to the Court of Appeals. And we will be in a protracted legal battle for the next who knows, 3 or 4 years before that's finally resolved. We have probably several hundred thousand dollars of legal expenses to be implemented. So we're asking that the committee review this bill and see that we are making a good logical argument as far as expanding the urban growth boundaries. We don't want to be like a Woodburn, like a Wilsonville, like a Wallerton, with state highways dividing our residential area. The state actually has seminars that they give periodically through the LCD. It says, how do you cope with the state highway dividing your city? And we don't want to create another situation with the state highway dividing our city. The state's already recognized that that's not a good idea.
In fact, Don, if I might interrupt, we have here a letter from the Oregon Department of Transportation, July 6, 2002, to the city of North Plains, which highlighted, we'll give you copies, some of you already have copies of it, where they strongly support, ODOT strongly supports going to the north and east, and they totally discourage going south. There is, ODOT does not want to have the city expand to the south of Highway 26 for transportation concerns. I'll pass this out.
Thank you.
There's a letter also that I believe Paul has from our mayor. Our city council is totally behind this concept and what we're proposing to do. We have, as I say, we have been working on this since 1996. And every step of the way, there has been an argument over concession land versus expansion farmland. In actuality, this is concession land plus this farmland. It's all on farmland ground. So that's a good way to go. We're going to have to go on to one. And if we're going to meet the requirements of providing a 20-year supply,
let him go to one on it.
We're going to share it. This, we feel, is the most appropriate and most logical expansion of the city.
Thank you. If I might add just a few remarks here, and I will be brief because I only have 5 minutes. You will hear different testimony from various folks. Let me tell you what this is not. This is not a battle among landowners. This is what the city wishes to do. This is the city, after spending considerable money, there's been close to $2 million worth of planning money spent by various parties, a large portion of that by the city, to come up with what the city wishes to do. You have in front of you, the other thing, it's not an expansion just onto farmland. All the land around the city, current city of North Plains, is farmland. It's all farmland. Some of it happened to have been designated 20 years ago as exception, but it's all farm. So no matter how you expand this in any direction, you would be going on to farmland. We have, for your information, you will be getting some letter from the Thousand Friends of Oregon, and I would call somewhat tepid opposition. They don't like the process that we're going through, but I want to give you a letter from Thousand Friends of Oregon, which they submitted again to the city of North Plains in 1999, and the highlighted portions. We recognize the barrier Highway 26 presents to creating a complete urban community out of the exception area south of the highway. In addition, some of our friends and allies are very concerned about the prospect of North Plains UGB expanding southward as the Hillsboro portion of the Metro Regional UGB expands northward towards it. In other words, if you go south of Highway 26, you start connecting up with Hillsboro and you get a mega city out there. If you confine it north of 26, then you keep the city confined. It becomes a small, well-planned city in Washington County.
Okay.
I'll give to you the letter from a Thousand Friends. And I'll also, I believe you have in your files the proposed amendment to 3164. We would ask that you adopt that amendment first, since the bill as written does not do what it was intended to do. I don't know if somebody was consuming some of my other clients' products when they drafted it, but It does not do what it was intended to do, and hopefully 3164-1 does get it. It's very narrow. It just says the city of North Plains may elect to include or exclude. That's all it says. It doesn't affect anybody else in the entire state. Thank you. Do you have anything more, Don, you want to add?
Thank you, Mr. Romaine. We do have Representative Kitts with us this morning. And Representative, I apologize we didn't lead off with you, and that I know you have a very busy schedule. Would you wish to make a comment on this, please?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Derek Kitts, State Representative for House District 30, which includes the city of North Plains. What I've presented before the committee, as a background, the city of North Plains came to me several months ago asking for some help on this issue, and I've been working with the city and with Mr. Romaine on this issue. What I've requested from the city, the mayor, the city council, the planning commissioner, etc., you'll find in this packet, I asked them to document their support of this, not simply provide lip service. We all know in this building what that can get you. So I've asked for documentation. I just pass that along to the committee for their consumption. The second handout, which I seem to have passed all of my handouts for the committee assistant, is an article that appeared in the Hillsborough Argus on, I believe it was last Tuesday, if memory serves correctly in this situation, where LCDC has recently come out in support of what the city would like to do. That being said, Mr. Chair, no apology necessary. I would defer to the experts on this issue. I simply would like to state that while we have a land use planning system in our state, times change. And I think this is a great example of where a blanket situation to an entire state doesn't really keep the state warm. And we need to let cities have some jurisdiction, some latitude in the decisions that they make. Because after all, I would challenge, with the exception of Representative Greenleg, which I would never do.
Smart.
I don't know Woodburn. I don't know Salem. And I don't know Central Point. The cities do. And I would just ask the committee's indulgence in listening to the cities and listen to what the cities have to say and realize that one blanket doesn't entirely adequately in this situation. So thank you for your time.
If I could make one other statement, Mr. Chair. We've also been authorized by Tom Bryan, the from Washington County, to say that he is very much in support of what the city wishes to do, and that they're really among the local government officials that work in this area. This is the right thing to do. It's the proper place. Yes, there are winners and losers whenever you have any kind of land use decision. Some people get a benefit, some people don't. But this is the right thing to do. We ask for your support of the amendment and passage of the bill. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, may I make one more comment?
Certainly.
If you look at the co-sponsors of the bill, I would just like to note for the record that almost the entire Washington County delegation is on board as co-sponsors of this bill. So I think that's an important... It's not unanimous. There is one member from Washington County that's still undecided. However, their response to me this morning was, you know, I'm inclined to support what the cities want to do, but I'm not going to co-sponsor, nor am I going to commit to the vote, which was what the conversation was. So it's almost unanimous amongst the Washington County delegation. Thank you for your time.
Any questions of this panel? Representative Doyle and then Representative Ackerman.
Just real quickly, who is the member?
Representative Williams.
Okay, so Representative Gallegos is now fully supportive of this?
She's on the bill. I don't know what her status is.
I could answer that if I... Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, I believe Representative Gallegos has gone neutral on the bill, as she's stated to me.
Okay.
So she is off the bill, but she's neutral. She hasn't committed either way.
Okay. Mr. Chair, there are questions, but I don't know if we're at the 15-minute point. Do you want to
No, let's get the questions out, Representative.
Looking at the presentation by Mr. Otterman, you're talking about this decision that was made back in 1997, and I understand now this is the third session that we've taken this issue up. Is that correct?
Sure.
Second session, okay. As you went through this review in 97, I'm assuming that you had knowledge of the statute at the time that required you to be using the exception land before you would move on to the EFU zone. How would that decision have been made, knowing that the law was contrary to that position?
Because I believe that the law, and probably the city attorney can answer this better than I could, but the law is not specific that you have to use exception land first. It's that you have to look at the exception land and see if it meets the requirements of your expansion. This was the big argument at LCDC, and again, if it would be appropriate, I could have the city attorney answer your question.
Representative Doyle, I might be able to help you with that one. The city's position all along is, after they looked, they did a study, they looked at the different land available, the exception land. What the city concluded was the exception land was not suitable for the purpose for which they needed the land, which was housing. They felt that that was not a good place to do housing for infrastructure development. It was the city's legal position, which was just upheld by LCDC, that in effect, if the land is not suitable for the particular purpose, the exception land, then you can go on to the next priority land. So the city looked at it. It would be like looking at, because somebody 20 years ago designated a particular area for development, and then something happens to that land for whatever reason. You put in a major international airport, or something happens weird to that land. It may not be suitable for the particular purpose anymore that you need the land for. They don't need industrial land. They've got plenty of that. What they need is housing. And what they don't want to do is have to go across the freeway for housing. So they decided that the exception land wasn't suitable, that they had the right under the law to look to other areas, and that's what's been in litigation, basically, or back and forth with LCDC ever since.
Follow up? I guess then to the LCDC issue, I guess I'm concerned that it seemed to me, at least, it's more concern from the city about the inconvenience of continuing this in the courts and let the courts decide this issue, as opposed to basically limiting the opposition's right to appeal. And why take away that right? Why not just let the courts decide it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, that's a very good question. The situation with the city right now is they have been... Everybody who looks at this from a planning standpoint, from the city's planning perspective, says you stay north. If you wanted to go south, if the city decided today, all right, forget it, we're not going north, we're not going east, we're going to go south onto the exception land, there is a whole cluster of people that will fight on that, and you are looking at another eight-year fight. Because the people around the airport, those who have the homes with hangars around that private airstrip, who are here in the room, you can raise your hand, a couple of them back there, will fight adamantly. They have an attorney, Ed Sullivan, who is adamantly opposed and has been very supportive of the city doing what the city wishes to do. What you're facing right now is a city of 1,600 people that has cumulatively, along with other planners and stuff, spent close to $2 million trying to figure out where it's going to put another 2,400 people, basically, because we're trying to get up to 4,000, to plan a well-planned place for the future. That's all that's happening. The city can't afford to stay in litigation on this thing forever and ever and ever. There's a significant segment of the city, and this may go with no growth, there's a significant segment of the city who says that if we can't go north and east, if we have to go south first, we just won't grow. We just won't do it. Because it makes no sense to go that way.
Representative Ackerman?
Mr. Chair? Can I ask all committees' indulgence if they have any questions of me
they can ask me personally now and not, I think it's my committee because I got another bill up.
Are there any questions for Representative?
Not Kitts.
Looks like you're free to go, Derek. Thank you very much for coming.
My question is, what's the operational status of the airport in the southern tier of property?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, it's active. It's an airstrip that's used by the homes that are there. It's active. In fact, it presents all types of logistical problems that we don't even get into about development around there because, frankly, the land that is the opponent's control, whatever want to develop, straddles basically both sides of that airstrip. And you've got all types of situations where you could develop that. You'd have housing on two sides of the airstrip. Not only would you have across the freeway problem, you'd have across an airstrip problem. You have a problem getting across Highway 26 because, well, it's at the Glencoe Road. It's now closed to pedestrian traffic. ODOT's closed it to pedestrian traffic. It's too narrow. It's not scheduled for rebuilding in the next 15 years.
It's not scheduled at all.
At all. So, I mean, it's way out. So the infrastructure development on the south side, it would be horrendously expensive. That's why the city wants to stay north, compact, well-planned community.
I have one follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow.
Are there any state or federal regulations regarding the airport siting at that position which would preclude or hamper the development of the southern portion?
Yeah. Why don't we bring up the city attorney? I think she can answer that for you very
quickly.
You'll need to introduce yourself, please.
Happy to. Mr. Chairman, I'm Pam Beery. I've been before you in other capacities. Before this morning, I'm here as city attorney for the city of North Plains. In response to Representative Ackerman's question, yes, there are preemptive regulations governing airport management and overflight in ORS Chapter 836, if memory serves, that govern height and other various use restrictions that are applicable where aircraft are using an area. Also, the Federal Aeronautics Administration has regulations, and even though this is a private airstrip, the rules do apply.
Are there any other questions of this panel? Thank you all very much.
Mr. Chair, if the committee would indulge me, I would like to make one comment in response to Representative Doyle's question about why don't we just continue to fight the litigation. I'm the lawyer that's been doing the litigation since 1996, was actually the date of our court case. I would echo the comments about cost, but I would also say there's a reason why it's important that the legislature really consider this bill, and that is that it isn't as cut and dried as your question may have indicated in terms of, you know, there's a clear 1, 2, 3, 4 stepwise priority. We spent, I think, 7 hours, it's fair to say, working with LCDC a couple of weeks ago and to get their support for our decision and to get an analysis of this very complex statutory scheme. It's also governed by administrative rules. Frankly, if those are the folks who are charged with administering those rules and understanding this, if it took us a 7-hour hearing to get through it, I think you can appreciate how complex it is. What we're asking here really is simply the legislature's statement that as applied to this situation that you've seen this morning, the commitment and requirement to go south across the freeway doesn't make sense. And that's all we're asking you to say. You're the only folks who can say that, and that's what we're asking for. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, if I can just... ask Ms. Beery, knowing you represent other cities as well, what are we looking at when we start making exceptions on a case-by-case basis? How many other cities are we going to be looking to come before us to start basically taking over the county land use decision-making process?
Mr. Chairman, that's a very fair question, and I as you know, I practice only in the area of government law, only represent local government. There's a part of me that finds a special bill like this, frankly, unfair. But I have to tell you that I do represent cities all over the state, and I'm well connected with the League and in the land use area. I honestly can tell you that I think the situation faced by North Plains is very unique. They are a neighbor city in the metro plan, so they are one of three cities that are required to take a substantial amount of growth in the metro area. So that narrows our window down to a group of three that might be similarly situated. I also represent communities that are divided by freeways who I can't envision another one of them who could benefit from this same kind of a bill. So I just don't see it as a domino effect. I can honestly tell you that.
Thank you.
We
gave Mr. Romaine and 15 minutes, and we took another 10 minutes for questions. So John DiLorenzo and Steve Harper, you have 15 minutes, and then we'll reserve 10 minutes after that for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is John DiLorenzo. I'm an attorney with the firm of Davis Wright Tremaine. I'm here on behalf of my client, Spec Development. We oppose House Bill 3164. Also with me is Mr. Steve Pfeiffer, who is Spec Development's land use lawyer. He's going to be available to answer any questions also. I'd like to first thank the chair for his graciousness and the courtesies that he has extended to us throughout this process. It's one thing to agree or disagree on the merits of a proposal. It's another thing to all believe in a process. And I want to applaud the chair for the fairness in which he has brought to this process and the numerous courtesies that he has extended to us. I am very grateful. Thank you. Spec Development. First of all, I might like to say that I have organized my thoughts in a booklet for you in order to adhere to my TV time limit. So I will throughout refer to various tabs in the booklet. And I'd also like to say as a prelude that bills sometimes might look like a good idea at first blush, but upon reflection, they may not constitute wise policy. It is for that reason that on March 18th, Representative Gallegos wrote a memo to Ramona Kennedy stating very curtly, quote, please remove my name as a sponsor of House Bill 3164. Spec Development has an arrangement with the owner of the exception land to the south of Highway 26 to develop the property should it ultimately be included within the North Plains urban growth boundary. Ordinarily, when a local government seeks to expand its urban growth boundary, the government must give priorities to lands as designated in 197.298. If there is no urban reserve land available, the second priority is land adjacent to an urban growth boundary that is identified in an acknowledged comprehensive plan as an exception area or a non-resource land. Now, I have attached to tab 3 of my materials a map showing the current city limits, the exception land, and 286-acre parcels of exclusive farm use resource land currently outside of the city's urban growth boundary. Bob and April Josie own much of the exception land to the south. You will be hearing from them at some point during the hearing. Bob Babosky and others working with him control the resource land to the east. Mr. Babosky and others, along with the City of North Plains, seek to expand the urban growth boundary to the resource land to the north and to the east, effectively leapfrogging, surrounding, and making an island of a dairy farm between the city and the Babosky parcel. What the bill does and what the amendments do, and frankly the amendments appear, I just reviewed them this morning, they appear to further narrow the bill. House Bill 3164 applies only to North Plains and basically permits the city to disregard the exception land when a highway runs through it. That is basically what the bill does. It, in effect, allows the city to disregard land which traditionally has been viewed as land available to protect other resource land. Now, the bill is unnecessary and the bill is bad policy. First of all, why is the bill unnecessary? The bill is unnecessary for a number of reasons. First, the proponents of this bill have argued that it is just too difficult to extend services across Highway 26 and that the very existence of the highway impedes the livability of the community. ORS 197.298 sub 3 already permits the city of North Plains to skip over the second priority land if a number of circumstances are present. I have appended that statute following the bill at the third page of tab 2, and I have highlighted that exception for your information. Subsection 3 already allows land of a lower priority, like the EFU land, to be included in an urban growth boundary if land of a higher priority, the exception land, is found to be inadequate to accommodate the amount of land required for one or more of a number of reasons. The reasons in play are reasons B and C. B says future urban services could not reasonably be provided to the higher priority, in other words, the exception land to the south, due to topographical or other physical constraints, like Highway 26, or C, maximum efficiency of land uses within a proposed urban growth boundary requires inclusion of the lower priority lands, the Bobosky land, in order to include or to provide services to the higher priority lands. Now, were the city of North Plains able to make those findings with respect to these exceptions, there would be no need whatsoever for this bill. However, instead of attempting to make findings to fit those exceptions, in other words, instead of attempting to make a finding that it is too difficult to extend services across Highway 26, the city of North Plains has argued that the livability standards in Goal 14 stand on an equal plane with the statute. The city's position has in fact been accepted by LCDC. We believe LCDC is in error. But regardless, the city is currently winning. The city is availing itself of a process that is established. It is winning. Why is there a reason for this bill? Now, there are dangers inherent in passing this bill. First of all, passage of the bill will eliminate the right of others in the community to be heard on a very important issue and will eliminate the only clear and present opportunity to have the Court of Appeals review LCDC's current position regarding the interaction of Goal 14 and the statute. That issue goes way beyond the city of North Plains. LCDC's order will be appealed because it is predicated on the Commission's view that the livability standards in Goal 14, which is an administrative rule, take precedent over the clear priority language of the statute. Now, I have attached a copy of Goal 14 at tab 6, and I have highlighted at that tab the livability standard that LCDC refers to. The current LCDC precedent will extend way beyond North Plains, and the rationale behind the order should be considered by the Court of Appeals, since it will affect the future treatment of farmland statewide. Passage of this bill, however, will eliminate the only case in which that issue can clearly be raised on all fours before the Court of Appeals, and it will further deny those citizens of North Plains who oppose these plans any appellate redress whatsoever. Now, it is one thing to pass a bill to change a rule of law. It is quite another to deny members of the community an opportunity to participate in a process already in place as a land use decision is being made. There was a reference to protracted legal battles. Well, members of the committee, legal battles take place when parties have issues which merit resolution. The legal battles are part of a process whereby the Court of Appeals will interpret whether Goal 14's livability standards should trump a clear statute. This bill does not just reference North Plains, because passage of the bill eliminates any opportunity for the Court of Appeals to rule on that particular issue, and next time the issue is presented to LCDC, they will have the same rule necessitating further appeals. Passage of House Bill 3164 will also establish a bad precedent. If this bill is enacted at the time North Plains has a clear administrative option and is in fact winning the battle, the legislature will have no rationale whatsoever for denying similar requests by other small communities in the future and may end up becoming the local zoning board of last resort. The legislature should be a policy-making body and should intervene in particular cases only when there is no administrative remedy available. Not only is there an administrative process currently available to North Plains, the proponents of the bill have availed themselves of it and have so far prevailed. Now, there is always a tendency to want to fix a problem, and there is a tendency here to want to act as a local zoning board because things may not just look right on that map. Should you decide to act as a local zoning board, and I don't think that would be good policy, you should not approve House Bill 3164 in its present form. Rather, you should amend the bill to create a different plan which creates the least amount of sprawl. If the city of North Plains is to expand to the north and to the east onto exclusive farm use land rather than to the south onto exception land, the property located in the south will almost certainly be developed into 5-acre gentleman, gentlewoman estates, as is currently allowed by its existing zoning. It can have 5-acre zoning right now. Once those estates are built, it is highly unlikely that the land would ever be redeveloped more densely in the next half century, as 5-acre parcels located close to urban growth, located urban areas, are in high demand and are typically developed into very high-end homes. Furthermore, 5-acre parcels cannot be farmed effectively. Therefore, should the city expand to the north and to the east, the south expansion land will be developed in a manner creating sprawl. However, if the city expands to the south, the north and the east parcels would remain in exclusive farm use, and would not permit sprawl development. Now, although utility services will need to be extended to the land to the south, we would expect that the city would require the developer, who is ultimately chosen, to pay for all of the costs associated with the expansion. My client expects that the south expansion land will be responsible for 100% of those costs. The costs involved in extending utilities to the east will also be substantial. They'll be way beyond North Plains' ability to pay. North Plains will have to look to the developer for that too. Mr. Romaine mentioned $2 million expended by the city. It may have been expended by the city, but that money has been financed by the chosen developer at this point. The city has expended very little of its own money in this endeavor. Now, the south expansion land is bisected by Glencoe Road, which has a full-axis interchange at Highway 26. You can see the manner in which Glencoe Road serves that parcel by looking at the aerial photograph that I've appended at tab 4. According to the traffic studies compiled by the city, no matter what direction the city expands in, the Glencoe Road Highway 26 interchange will require improvements to maintain adequate levels of service. Now, the proponents of the bill suggest that good planning cannot occur when a city is separated by Highway 26. In fact, many cities straddle highways and interstates due to the location of existing transportation improvements. Look at Tualatin, Wilsonville, Albany, Cottage Grove, and other cities, and you will find thriving communities taking advantage of their proximity to transportation improvements. Instead, a comparison of the map at tab 3 and the aerial photograph at tab 4 will show that the proponents of this bill propose to leapfrog an existing dairy farm and include a high-density housing to the east, nearby industrial development. Although expansion to the north may make some sense, I believe it might make some sense, expansion to this isolated parcel to the east has absolutely no rational basis other than the fact that it happens to be controlled by one of the chief proponents of this bill. So in conclusion, this is not a situation in which existing use provides great benefit to community. There is no existing use. It is not fighting for its very existence. It does not require legislative action. Here we're talking about a prospective use, and one for which the city of North Plains has a variety of administrative options available. The city and the proponents of this bill have in fact availed themselves of that process, and they happen to be succeeding. Adoption of the bill unfairly eliminates the right of a significant number of members of North Plains to appeal, and will establish an awful precedent for you whenever any community who wishes to supersite its own UGB expansion comes to you. Next time, it may not be a highway. Small city may complain of some other impediment, or even an inconvenience to expansion, seeking legislation to muzzle an administrative debate. I have in the past, and will in the future, advocate legislative solutions when no administrative solution is possible, and when there is good public policy to make the legislative change. That aspect of the process does not bother me in the least. However, in this case, there are administrative remedies. They have and are being pursued by the city of North Plains, and so far they've been availing to the city. Not only is there no reason to pass this bill, passage of it will severely limit your choices in the future. Mr. Chairman, I thank you very much for your time. Mr. Pfeiffer and I are available to answer any questions which the committee may have.
Thank you, John, very much. Any questions? Representative Doyle.
Thank you. Mr. DiLorenzo, there was discussion earlier about the private airport that's on the south side of 26. And as I look at those maps, I mean, it comes pretty close to 26 right now. And then I'm trying to reconcile that airport being there when you've got ODOT and I guess the city now saying that Highway 26 is going to be expanded to 8 lanes at some point. What's the likelihood of that private airport staying in that position if there's that kind of expansion?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Doyle, I have brought my airport expert with me, Mr. Pfeiffer. I will yield to him.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Doyle, the airport itself, as Ms. Beery points out, is subject to some level of minimal regulation today, but what
We need to have your name.
Oh, Steve Pfeiffer for the record.
Thank you.
What needs to be pointed out is a couple of things in addition. First of all, that airport exists as the smallest, most least regulated category of airport in the state. It's a private airstrip. Secondly, the regulations under the statutes and the administrative rules are minimal. But more importantly, they essentially regulate height and other buildings or impediments in the approach zones off either end of that airport, not at all as much to the either side. So it would have little impact on the residential development in the exception area. It's also notable, if you look at that airport in the diagram, the approach zone from the northwest goes right over the area to the east that the city is asking to come bring in. And as you point out, it already passes over the airport. With regard to what would happen in an expansion of the highway, I really don't believe that issue has at least been addressed in a great degree to date. You can probably look at it logically, and there's probably some risk increasing as traffic increases on 26, that ODOT would take a position, if they could figure out a way to deal with the compensatory aspect of it, that further additional traffic is not well served by being in a flight path. On the other hand, with regard to the exception area, that circumstance won't change. Remember, that's a residential airport. It's serving and was intended to serve from its outset residential uses which exist adjacent to the runway. And it's difficult for me to imagine that we could now point to additional residential development further from those residences which are already there as somehow being at odds with that airport continuing. The risk may be there for the airport from the roadway expansion. It is not there from residential development.
Follow.
There is other discussion about the infrastructure on the North Plains side. Do you have any knowledge of any other infrastructure that's on the other side of 26, or what the future plans are for infrastructure?
To the south.
Yes.
Representative Doyle, the situation that exists, and I'll speak to the three critical infrastructure, and this essentially is reflected in the city's findings that they presented to the LCDC. Right, Glenville Road, that interchange is already failing. The ramps failed the level of service test, and it needs to be upgraded, as the city's findings indicate, regardless of whether they expand at all, let alone without regard to which direction they go. So that infrastructure will be required, and it would include a pedestrian overpass for various administrative reasons, when and if that happens. But again, that's an existing deficiency which will need to be upgraded regardless of direction. Sewer, regardless of direction, the city's own findings confirm, will require an upgrade at a minimum to the pump station. The lines may exist to the east, at least, to some extent may have the capacity. There will be pump station upgrades in the city regardless of direction. And further, the city's own findings with regard to water confirm that those lines will have to be significantly upsized for any expansion to the east. The point again being, there will be costs associated with this, those three key infrastructures, regardless of, in some cases, whether the city expands at all, and secondly, without regard to what direction they choose. But the most important point is probably the one John makes, is that cost is highly unlikely, and I think you've seen this time and time again, to be borne by the city, but will rather be borne by the developer, which develops in whichever direction the city ultimately chooses. Essentially, that'll be an off-site infrastructure requirement that will be borne, again, by the developer or collection of developers in any direction.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, Representative Doyle asked the city attorney whether she thought passage of this bill would open the way to lots of other situations where we'd be asked to do similar things. I wanted to ask you the same question, though. If the Court of Appeals and presumably the Supreme Court ultimately would decide the case that you're appealing and side with the city, wouldn't that be setting more of a precedent or a broader ruling than what this bill, which is crafted now just to apply to North Plains would do. I mean, wouldn't that open the way, interpreting existing law in a way that many, many other situations would seek the same kind of ruling?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, well, frankly, the debate before LCDC has opened up that issue. That very debate has broadened this matter way beyond the borders of North Plains. LCDC has now taken a position that the livability standards of Goal 14 can allow a community to, in essence, ignore the clear prioritized priorities in the statute and to ignore availing themselves of the exceptions provided in the statute. The debate is already being waged. If you do nothing, that process will continue through the Court of Appeals, and ultimately there will be a resolution to that question. If you pass this bill, you make a policy choice. You make a policy choice that, at least for the time being, the rule at the LCDC will be that this priority schedule in the statute means nothing, as long as a city decides that its livability standards require it to ignore exception land because the exception land just does not meet its livability needs. That's a very... By passing the bill, you make that election, at least temporarily, until another case comes up to LCDC. But you are ensuring that the next case that comes there will be subject to that rule. We think the rule is an error. We think the rule does not preserve farmland. I think that is one of the reasons why some of the folks who were initially neutral on this bill have recognized that this bill would set a dangerous situation in place and that this issue needs to be resolved.
Mr. Chairman,
I'd just like to make a comment that one of the reasons that the chair decided to hear this bill was exactly to the area that Mr. DiLorenzo is now going, and that is that when local governments, in my opinion, need to have more flexibility in our land use planning, and it's not there, and hopefully this bill will begin the discussion, because something is wrong with our land plan, land use planning in the state, when we exempt the people who live in an area from making decisions regarding their own area. And that's, to me, what this bill is all about, John, and I agree with you totally, and that's one of the reasons we're hearing it, because we hope there will be a message coming out of this bill.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say that of course, as you know, I have great respect for you and your views, your opinions, and I understand your point of view, but I think this all focuses on the fact that this bill does not concern North Plains as much as it also concerns a major policy decision that is opening up for the state. And that is why when people say this bill only concerns North Plains, my position has been, no, it does not. It goes way beyond North Plains. And that is why Farm Bureau and others who are here, I believe, are opposed to this bill.
Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
And Mr. Chairman, once again, we truly appreciate your courtesies. Thank you for extending us these opportunities.
Committee, again, I'll remind you that we have floor session starts at 10:15, but we have been excused from floor session until there is a vote, and then they will notify us at that time. So we'll try to work through to whatever point we can before we have to leave. And also that if you have a difficulty, we're looking at scheduling two evening meetings on Monday the 14th and Wednesday the 16th. If either of those from 6 to 8 p.m., if either of those dates you have a difficulty in attending, please let me know or the administrator know.
Would you repeat those again, Mr. Chair?
The dates? Monday the 14th and Wednesday the 16th.
And what times?
6 to 8 p.m.
A week from Monday, then, huh?
As you are aware, the Speaker's office sent a directive out yesterday notifying us that this committee has until April 18th to hear and move all House bills.
Wow.
This committee sits here at the moment with 121 bills. So obviously we're going to do our best to prioritize and to move those bills forward and try to give them adequate hearing time. So that's the reason for the two additional meetings. Okay, I'm going to try and rotate. We had proponents and opponents, and we'll go back to proponents of the bill, and I'll ask Bill Jackson and Merrill Roth to come forward. Are they here? Apparently not here. Bill Jackson, Merrill Roth. Oh, they are here. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Bill Jackson, here with Merrill Roth, speaking for the residents of Sunset Airstrip, a residential air park situated on the south side of the highway. And Representative Ackerman, you had a question about the status of the airstrip. I don't know where you were going with that question, but maybe I could address it if you could elaborate a little bit.
Sir, you have to address your question to me.
I'm sorry. Chairman.
There you go. Yes, sir, you may.
Representative Ackerman.
Go ahead and address it. Would you like to address your question to Representative?
I'd like to address a question to Representative Ackerman.
Representative Ackerman, all right with that?
Certainly.
Go ahead, sir.
You had a question about the status of the airstrip, and it wasn't clear to me where you were going with that question, and if I knew, maybe I could elaborate and help out there.
My idea was that the airstrip may be incompatible with the residential development of that property if it was included within the urban growth boundary. That's my inquiry.
Uh-huh. Let me say this. The first layout that the people on the airstrip saw of the development on the south side of the highway, they showed, I don't know, 700 homes and apartments and whatnot scattered around. And the thing that really got my attention was the proposed new schoolhouse, and it was situated just about where the middle of our runway was. Now, we kind of objected to this, and that really got our attention. And it was pretty obvious that there was no consideration given to our status at all. And a local landowner stood up in an open meeting in North Plains and said that, well, those guys should have known when they built those houses there that they were in non-compliance and they're on a conditional use. And granted, we are on a conditional use. However, in 1995, the Oregon legislature stepped up to that type of issue and mandated that the counties in their comprehensive plans needed to encompass these types of operations, communities, if you will, into the comprehensive plans. And as a matter of fact, Washington County is now in the process of doing that, as has Deschutes County and Clackamas County.
Do you have any other testimony, sir? Or
no.
Okay, we'll go to the next gentleman.
Chairman, the only testimony I can give you is...
I need to have you identify yourself first.
I'm Merrill Roth. I'm part owner of the airstrip.
Thank you.
And we developed it in 1968. And everybody built nice homes on it. They're well kept up. They're not exactly cheap. And it's my feeling that putting 600 or 700 houses on the remaining land would almost create a slump, because the roads aren't wide. They have to force more. The traffic would be just obnoxious, and it's just cramming an awful lot of buildings into one small piece of property.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Bob and April Josie. By the way, Mr. Romaine and Mr. DiLorenzo, if we had time, I think it would appropriate, because of the magnitude of this bill, that you probably both be given maybe 2 or 3 minutes to do a close on the issues, if you a rebuttal close. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Gerard and members of the committee. My name is Bob Josie, and this is my wife, April. And we are the landowners to the south of North Plains. We own most of that exception lands, and so this bill would affect us. And we've handed in written testimony, and so I'd like to not read it to you, but in this whole process, North Plains, the city of North Plains, the Planning Commission and the City Council was never presented. Most of the information they were presented was biased, and it was in fact some of it false. And most of this was information was funded by the developers to the north and east of the city. And to show you an example of that, it happened again today when the city manager got up and explained to you about the land of the east is grassland. Now he left off the part that's also a large active dairy that would end up in the middle of the city. So that's the kind of information that the city council and the planning commission has been given to make their decision of direction of growth. Also, as I see this bill, and I haven't seen this new bill or the amended bill, but it looks to me like North Plains would never again have to pay attention to farm ground if they expand. They would, as long as there's exception land south of the Sunset Highway, they don't have to pay attention to that on future expansions. It's our belief that North Plains would cross the highway at some point, especially as if population grows, no matter which direction it grows. Someday there's going to be a big box store or something like that, a strip mall that wants to come in, and they're going to want to be on the south side of the highway. There's already 20,000 trips of automobiles on the Glencoe Road south of the Sunset Highway, and there's only 8,400 trips a day going into North Plains as it is. So we really do believe that it will go there someday. It's a question of when. Also, we believe this change, or this House Bill 3164, just flies in the face of land use as it is presently. That it was mentioned today that's farm ground to the south of Sunset Highway, which it is, but it could have been developed into 5-acre parcels. We could have done it 20 years ago. But we are hazelnut farmers. We're good hazelnut farmers. We've made a living on it. We continue to do that. Unfortunately, now we have a disease that's in hazelnuts. It started in the north end of the state. We have it as bad as anybody, and we've already had to remove 30 acres of hazelnuts from that exception land, and we probably will have to remove the rest within the next 5 to 10 years. And so I guess what they've told you today is if we would have divided that into 5-acre parcels, then it wouldn't have been farm ground. It would have made more sense for the city to come there. Now, to me, that seems a little backwards. It's easier to develop it when it's one piece of ground, not divided into 5 parcels. Also, it's been said today that it makes sense for the city of North Plains to go to the north, away from the city of Hillsboro. And many farmers believe that cities really ought to grow towards each other, not further into the country if possible, especially in that end of the state, in that part of the valley where you have metro area, you have Hillsboro, Beaverton, Forest Grove. And to tell North Plains, it'd be a good idea for you to grow even further out in the country. Let's just take a little more farm ground. Let's mess up a few more roads. It just doesn't make much sense. It's already difficult to travel with farm equipment on the south side of Sunset Highway. Maybe that's where the population should go. As I said, it's our belief the concept of a comprehensive small city is lost when you develop the east side, leave a dairy in the middle of the town. It just really doesn't make sense to us. And as was stated earlier today, LCDC has already approved North Plains' plan, so we really don't see a reason for this. And perhaps it would take away any chance we have of appeal to say that at this point, LCDC is saying that their rules outweigh the state statutes, and we would not have a chance to appeal that to find out if that's true. Also, I've noticed today that you've had a couple of attorneys come to you, talk to you about laws of the airport, things like that, and they're asking you to be a local land use board, I guess, make a decision for them, but you're not going to see any written testimony on these laws. Do these laws really affect this building homes or not? You're not going to know. That is the job of a local land use committee, I believe, and not here. Also, Chairman Girard, unfortunately he's not here, but he made the statement that that he wants to pass this bill because it needs to be the start of there's a problem with our land use laws. Well, it seems to me there ought to be some other way that that could happen, that you don't have to just change the law. Maybe there's some discussion somehow. Maybe LCDC could look at these things, but I believe that the bill just shouldn't pass. And in conclusion, we believe it's unfair, it negates land use planning to save farm ground, and it does start a precedent. There's going to be other cities here that are going to say, you know, by the way, you did that for North Plains, we'd sure like it if that could happen for us, and you're going to have it happen and happen and happen. So now, if April has something to say, otherwise, we're open for questions.
My name's April Josie, and, excuse me, I just had one comment with regards to the people from the airstrip. When we got involved in this process, it was just a couple years ago. So North Plains had been working on expanding their urban growth boundary for a long time. And we just, since Bob's a farmer and we weren't ready to develop our land, even though it was zoned that we could, we had wanted to finish raising our girls and then maybe move more out in the country. And so we hadn't done anything and we didn't want to get involved, but there was a situation where some land Metro wanted got thrown out because they were told they needed to use exception lands first. And Bob and I said, well, let's just get involved. Rather than something happening to us, let's make the best of it. And part of the reason that I felt real strong about that was if our land did become part of the urban growth boundary and have a development on it, I wanted to be able to drive by it and feel okay about the neighbors that maybe I didn't live near anymore and not have them mad at me. Like the airstrip people said, that was part of my goal, was to be able to control what happened to our land and not just let something happen to us, but be a part of that process. And so at that point, we did become involved. And again, I don't think the South part has ever been given a fair shake because the studies done are so skewed and false information. And granted, somebody reading them who doesn't farm that land and doesn't know the crops maybe would believe it, but any of us that look at it would think, wow, how did they come up with this one? So they've never been painted a good picture of the South Side at all. So are there any questions for us?
I have one more comment, if I might. Chairman Girard,
yeah, no.
And committee members. You might be interested in why is this considered exception land and not farm ground, because we've been farming it. And the reason is because there's an airstrip there and there are 14 homes associated with that airstrip. When this county did land use planning, they looked at that property and said, well, this is already partially developed. We should have it so it can be developed further. Chairman Girard, I would like to comment to you, if I may.
Certainly.
That you brought up the comment that you think the reason you've supported this bill is because you believe that land use may not be right, and this would start the discussion. And it's really my opinion that there must be a different avenue to do that, that to pass a law like this, just to start a discussion of land use problems. I don't know how you do it. I would assume that maybe you could go to LCDC chairman and say that maybe we could do this rather than change a bill. But
well, Mr. Rindy from LCDC is sitting in the back of the room, and I hope that he's hearing this testimony, because and I know he is, and I know that this is the beginning of a dialogue in that direction, Mr. Josie, and I share your concerns and your thoughts. Thank you for expressing. Are there any questions? Thank you both very much. And our final two speakers, Randy Tucker and Don Schellenberg.
comparative review.
And knowing which direction you guys are coming from, is Don here?
Right there. He's hiding.
Oh. I thought you were...
Can I hide in the chair?
It was hiding.
I
got it in the chair.
I could have commented, Donna, where you had your head.
I've had mine there before.
Bobby, outside, Mr. Chairman.
I'd appreciate if you would hold your comments as briefly as possible, in that everybody knows where you are anyway. So, and then we'll have Mr. Romaine and Mr. DiLorenzo for a 3-minute rebuttal. And then, committee, we do plan to vote on this bill. Randy?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randy Tucker. I'm with 1,000 Friends of Oregon. And our written testimony from my colleague, Mary Kyle McCurdy, is being distributed right now. I'm not going to dig all the way through that. I would like to begin by noting with amusement, I had not seen the letter from 1,000 Friends that Mr. Romaine distributed earlier today, and the first sentence of it reads, I understand questions have arisen about 1,000 Friends of Oregon's position on the direction for potential expansions of North Plains Urban Growth Boundary, and my only comment is, some things never change. I would like to point... Mr. Romaine pointed out a couple of bullet points there that supported his position. I would like to also point to if you have that handy, and if not, I'll read you the one bullet point that's at the bottom of that page, which says, equally important to us is the amount of land proposed to be added. In this connection, we will look critically at the forecasted population growth. And any plan for accommodating anticipated growth should include vigorous efforts at redevelopment and infill as the first priority. So no matter which way this goes, I think it's important to keep in mind that any expansion of North Plains urban growth boundary needs to first go through a process of documenting the need for that expansion. And that's one of the concerns that we've brought to this issue. This isn't a bill that says you can expand the UGB. It says that if you're going to expand it and you can justify it in other ways, then here are some criteria for how you go about it. The testimony I've submitted, of course, indicates our opposition to this bill. And while we've had discussions with both sides on this, and it's been interesting and difficult decision, we've ended up in the same place that we were last session, which is in opposition to coming to the legislature to address this local issue. And we have some specific concerns about that the bill could potentially authorize the city to expand to the west, which it has tried to do in the past, and no one is proposing to do that right now. We want to make that very clear, but that is some of the best farmland in the state, if not the country, and we don't think that there should ever be an expansion of North Plains UGB in that direction. With respect to your comments, Mr. Chair, about flexibility in the system, our testimony suggests that there is in fact the kind of flexibility in the system that would allow certain factors to be taken into account, and I think that though we have yet to fully review the decision of LCDC a couple of weeks ago, it seems that that decision supports that statement. Finally, as far as we need to start the discussion of what to do about land use, well, obviously we know that we support the program, but also I'd just like to point out, as you know, because you are the person that scheduled it, there's another bill up today that would provide a forum for that very discussion, and we'll be testifying on that bill as well. So those are my quick comments. You have my written testimony, Mary Kyle's written testimony. We would urge you not to pass this bill, I'll stop there.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Don Schoen, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. I have handed out a letter from the Washington County Farm Bureau that would like that to be made part of the record as well, opposing both this bill as well as LCDC's decision to approve the North Plains plan. I'll skip over some of my testimony and really get to the meat of the thing. There are three issues at stake in consideration of this bill. The precedence of ignoring the law and the adjacent exception land simply because there is a highway between the existing UGB and the adjacent exception land. Two, invoking the legislature to assume the role of planning authority and thereby bypassing the local planning process and developing large And then third, developing large parcels of undivided land instead of the exception land, which is already divided into numerous parcels. Farm Bureau's position is there are numerous cities that are intersected by a highway, and that has not prevented any of them from expanding their UGB. In fact, I attended Metro's UGB expansion tours this summer and viewed a proposed expansion in East Multnomah County, where the city is proposing and requesting permission to expand its UGB crossing this exact same highway. They obviously don't see a problem with that. Secondly, this bill is drafted so narrow that it only applies to North Plains. Acceptance of this proposal requires that the legislature sit in the place of local planning officials. The Oregon Farm Bureau believes that the appropriate function of the legislature is to set policy and depend on the local government to implement that policy. In fact, as the Washington County Farm Bureau letter indicates, both the local government and LCDC have already acted on this issue, so really there is no need for the legislature to involve itself in the issue. Finally, Farm Bureau policy clearly opposes removing productive farmland from the EFU zone, and the land that would be included in the UGB if this bill were to pass is clearly some of the best farmland in Washington County. It would be an even greater loss if exception lands were passed over simply because of the presence of a highway. If the highway was such a big issue, how come the land was designated as exception land in the first place? The Oregon Farm Bureau respectfully asks that you do not adopt House Bill 3164. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions?
I have one for both. Long-range gut feeling, will all that area eventually be developed? I don't expect it in my lifetime, but would both of those properties ultimately in the next 20 or 30 years all be developed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, I actually don't know the answer to that. I think there's some skepticism in my office as to North Plains' need for the amount of land that that they've, at least in the past, expressed the desire to bring into the UGB. And there's a process for analyzing that need. And I was talking to, I can't even remember who yesterday, who lived in Washington County, who was saying that, you know, it's hard to predict the future. I don't think anyone in Hillsboro 20 years ago thought that Hillsboro would have 80 or 90,000 people. So it's, I don't, on the other hand, we have seen many cases around the state where population projections for the purpose of establishing UGBs, mainly with the original UGBs that were established about 20 years ago, were wildly inflated. And there are cities that said that in 2000 they'd have 35,000 people in them, they have now 13,000 people in them, and that sort of thing. So it's, I don't really know. I mean, in the long run, as they said, you know, we are all dead, and so in the long run, it, you know, we could expand a lot, but I don't know.
Don, do you have any comments, or you want to skate around it like you did?
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Zahner, it's my belief that under the land use planning system that we have in place today, the answer to your question is yes. We have today what I consider to be not a farmland protection program, but a farmland conversion program. And that's evidenced particularly by the fact that we require a 20-year buildable supply for most urban growth boundaries. And that's simply a recipe for ultimately paving over all the land.
Mr. Chair, actually, and Whipson's Honor, one last point. One of our concerns is that North Plains, in this case, which is a very small city located very close to a very large city, be coordinating and agreeing with that very large metropolitan area that is very close to it as far as you know, the reality of its population projections. So it's the idea of North Plains being taken completely in isolation and making these population projections without considering the context of that city, which is really close to the metro area, is something that we've had a long-term concern over, and that's addressed in that bullet point, I believe, that I read from that letter of ours from 4 years ago.
Representative Dorff.
Thank you. Mr. Tucker, can you distinguish the 1999 letter that Mr. Romain provided us and the testimony today? Is there a difference in positions?
I was pleased when I saw the letter. And this letter, you know, just to be completely honest, it predates my familiarity with this issue. My first involvement with this issue was last session when the bill came before the legislature. Mary Kyle in our office, who's submitted the testimony today, is the person who handles these urban growth issues. From perusing the letter today, it seems relatively consistent, I was pleased to see, with our testimony today. So, obviously, questions having to do, not obviously, questions having to do with what North Plains should do don't necessarily presuppose that that should happen through the passage of a bill in the legislature. And I'm here mainly today testifying against the passage of this bill.
And Mr. Schellenberg, put you on the spot here. Has the Farm Bureau decided if this will be a scorecard issue yet?
Mr. Chairman, I represent Doyle. We sent out a letter early on in the session along with our policy book. And in that policy book, I believe we gave the indication that bills on which we do a floor letter will be a scorecard. Personally, the way I do things, if I testify on a bill and then I do a floor letter on the bill, if I testify on the bill, I'll likely do a floor letter on the bill. And so, short answer is yes.
Seeing no other questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Romain, Mr. DeLorenzo, if you both come up. Certainly. John, would you like to bring anyone?
Certainly, I need my lawyer.
Okay.
You've got to have a good lawyer. Where are they?
Everybody needs to have a good lawyer.
Is there such an animal? That's an oxymoron.
So they both are their lawyers. We have to really know where they're going to stand. Something that looks like a
lawyer. You each will have 3 minutes. So, Mr. Romain, you're rebuttal.
For a minute and a half.
All right.
Just very quickly. Hard cases make bad law. That's an old axiom you hear in law school. It's one of these dumb things you hear periodically. But basically, what happens is, when you look at this thing, and if you put it the right way, actually, it makes it easier to look at. When you look at it, you say the city shouldn't go south. I mean, CODOT said the city shouldn't go south. Kelsey, a Thousand Friends comes in with their letter 4 years ago and says basically don't think south is a good idea. Nobody really wants the city to go south. The problem is right now you've got LCDC that in effect comes up with a statement. In this case, it says the city doesn't have to go south. And they use a reasoning which is in effect certain. Gets you to that objective. And by having this bill, to Representative Rosenbaum's question, really what you do is you don't allow that case to go forward. That may be an issue we can talk about sometime down the line. But really all you're saying is you're solving North Plains' problem. Maybe in a different scenario, you won't come up with a goal 14 from city statute or anything like that. But for this particular case, hard cases do make bad law, so why have the bad law? Why not have the particular exception? Now, also, one little point about the area to the east. It's fully serviceable now. It's got the water. It has the sewer. The reason you don't bring in the dairy farm that's right in here is most of this has to be served by a new sewer line. It has to be, and there is no way expense-wise, really, that you're going to want that. This is an easier area to develop. Having said that,
yes. Mr. Chair, for the record, Pam Beery again, City Attorney for North Plains. I have three brief points. I would call them rebuttal, I guess, to some of the comments that were made by opponents. They have to do with money, the facts of this case, and the policy we're looking at this morning. On the money, it's absolutely flat untrue that big developers are paying for all of the city's work in this case. Yes, there are winners and losers. Depending on which direction we grow, you can definitely figure that out for yourselves. We have obtained statewide grants. The city budgets money to pay for my services. And so you need to understand that, in fact, the neighbor city study that resulted in the decision to grow to the north and east is a city product. It's a city goal. Certain developers are going to benefit, but it's our desire that we grow that way. Number two, on the facts, I would concur with Mr. Romaine's statement that this is a very unique factual case, and Representative Rosenbaum headed in that direction with her question. Yes, LCDC made an important statement in our case, but it was based on our case. They'll have another urban growth boundary expansion case. They'll have another opportunity to review ORS 197-298 and how it fits. What they've determined is that in our case, the proper direction to grow is north and east, and they undertook a legal analysis to get there. It's a classic legal framework. So by depriving the Court of Appeals of review of this case, you're not forever closing the door on a decision on how this statute works. It'll come up again, and a court will get a chance to review it. The third point is the policy point. As we discussed earlier, I think it is important to recognize this is a unique situation. This is the livability decision that was referenced earlier for North Plains, and I have the record here to prove it if you're interested in that level of detail. I'm assuming you're not. It was characterized by the opponents as a unique situation where North Plains gets to say that livability trumps state law. I'm here to tell you that the livability stuff was explicitly pulled out of LCDC's decision 2 weeks ago, and I have the documentation to prove it, and I just feel the strong need to set the record straight here. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. DiLorenzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This, at first blush, appears to be a narrow bill, but it is a narrow bill in broad clothing. It is a narrow bill which will surely have broad impacts. The issue regarding the interaction of Goal 14 and the statute must be addressed. I agree with counsel, at some point it will be addressed. But passage of this bill will postpone that day of reckoning for years, and for the time being will then permit any city to ignore the clear priorities which preserve farmland in the statute whenever their adjacent exception land is available, if they can show that the livability aspects of their needs in Goal 14 trump the statute. That will be the rule for several years at LCDC unless this case is taken up now. Sure, someone will be able to challenge that down the line, but they certainly won't for a number of years. So this really is a policy choice. A yes vote on this bill will at least temporarily validate that decision statewide. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. That is the effect of a yes vote. Is that what you want to do? If that's what you want to do, then we should be discussing a bill of general application that would in fact do that. Secondly, there is a temptation to be a local land use board. I urge you not to be a local land use board, but if you can't resist being a local land use board, then please look at the photograph that's in the materials. See how close that eastern parcel is to an industrial area. Ask yourself whether you would want to live in high-density areas right by an industrial area, and see how the parcel would surround the dairy farm that would not be included in the UGB. If you pass this bill, what are you going to tell the next city who comes to you and wishes to expand its UGB because of some other impediment or some other inconvenience? You'll say, well, North Plains was a unique situation, and they'll tell you why theirs is a unique situation, and you will be hard-pressed not to be a local zoning board. Mr. Romaine said that hard cases make bad law. Well, you may find, some of you may find North Plains' case compelling. You may feel that you want to help them realize their vision. But hard cases make bad law. And if you accommodate North Plains through legislation, you will, in my view, be making bad law. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. DiLorenzo. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 3164. Open a work session on House Bill 3164. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I move that the amendments known as House Bill 3164-1 be amended to House Bill 3164.
Representative Richardson has moved to accept the amendment to House Bill 3164. Is there any objection? Representative Doyle objects. Therefore, we shall take any further discussion. Representative Doyle.
For the committee to note, on this amendment, it says any land use planning goals adopted under ORS 197.225. And just so you know what 197.225 is, the DLCD and the the DLCD shall prepare and the Land Conservation Development Commission shall adopt goals and guidelines for use by state agencies, local governments, and special districts in preparing, adopting, amending, and implementing existing and future comprehensive plans. The amendment that has been proposed says North Plains does not have to follow it at all. And I think that's way too broad for this kind of decision.
Does the committee wish to have any testimony? Have anyone speak to this or any other concerns? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Rosenbaum?
No.
Representative Greenleaf?
Yes.
Representative Doyle?
No.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Zahner?
Aye.
Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Chair Garrard?
Aye. The amendment to House Bill 3164 is accepted. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3164 as amended be passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Richardson has moved that House Bill 3164 be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Doyle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, members, we've talked in the past on different bills as we, I think, the concern, and I think legitimate concern, that we continue to deal with these land use measures on a piecemeal basis without any clear vision, without any clear goals, what we want to do. And I fully agree that we need to revise our land use planning process. I think that it has become a burden to different entities, either whether it's the cities, whether it's the industry. In some ways, it's also a burden to our farming community, and I believe that we have to have that discussion. I was pleased to see that there is going to be some consideration of some interim work with this task or this commission or task force that's being planned to be worked on a little bit later today. What I am very concerned about, however, is that there are a number of bills still in the process, things that are being tapped in, that this committee is going to be requested to decide, that goes directly to the issue that was presented before, that, you know, makes this committee, the local planning board, on a number of issues. And I think it's wrong. I think it's something that, you know, no matter how warped I believe the land use statutes are right now, that you know, that's these type of instances where, you know, we look at something very specific, not realizing or not taking into account the implications on a statewide basis. Truly, it's just a negative upon this body. I think it shows our lack of vision, and I think it shows that, you know, we're not trying to fix the overall problems, but to just, you know, permit basically the legislature to become this local planning board. The statute is clear now. I mean, there really is no question where the expansion ought to go because of the statute the way it's written. It was rightly appealed to DLCD, or LCDC. The city was able to prevail on that. It's going to continue going through the process to see if that's the right direction to go. Being required or requested to step in at this point and basically tell landowners who have already planned on what they were going to do with their property, following the rules that were there beforehand, knowing that their land was to be considered before anybody else. We're telling them, don't worry about if you decide to move on property having certain expectations, just come later and we'll change the law to change those expectations and to change the realities of those expectations. And to the city, who
you know, basically went through a review process and said, we don't care what the law says. We want to go a different way. I thought was, you know, it's fine that they can make that decision, and I support the fact that local communities, you know, should maintain control of what they are doing, but it still has to be within the law. And the right way to handle it was to first try to get the law changed before making the decisions. And to me, you know, them coming out now saying, well, look at all that we've done in anticipation of this without regard to the law, to me it's offensive. And I think that until we look at a more comprehensive review of our land use policies and practices, that these are the exact kind of decisions that should not be presented to us, because it's without vision. Decisions have been made at the local level. They're working through the appeal process. I think we need to keep it that way.
Any further discussion? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Doyle made a comment during one of our special sessions that a particular issue was probably the only time he and I would ever be on the same side, and apparently history is repeating itself, because I find myself in agreement with him about this bill, too. And I have to say I'm deeply troubled by this bill, because I have no idea which side of this dispute in terms of development is right or should prevail. But I think where I have come around to voting no on the bill today is really a process question, because it does seem to me it's a very bad precedent to set for us to intervene in an interpretation of the law without actually dealing with the underlying policy of the law, which I think is appropriately what the legislature should do. And if there's a problem with the statute or over time the way it's been interpreted, then we ought to rewrite the statute. But that's not what the bill does. What the bill does is just takes one very narrow case interpreting the statute and jumps in on one side of a dispute, and frankly on the side of the dispute that seems to be prevailing through the process working the way it's supposed to. So for me, I really feel we should let the case go forward. Presumably most of the work has been done. Now it's to the appellate courts to decide whether it was done correctly or not, and I don't feel comfortable jumping in and yet not addressing, if there is an underlying problem, what that problem is. So I feel I will vote no today.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Zahr.
Yes, I also struggle. I will vote yes on a courtesy to get it through. And the reason, my reason, is that Woodburn has, for the last 6 years, tried to develop a little piece of property right out there next to the mall. And it should be. They have some companies that would come in and start their businesses, and they've gone through all the processes that they can, all the permitting for years and years and years, and all the overlays and trust me, I've heard all these stories, and it drives me nuts. And so that's the only means that city, the town, has is through us, because we'll try to get some legislation to let them offer the property for these businesses to come in. And I guess what I'm saying, long story short, the cities, in my opinion, should kind of determine their own destiny, and that's. That's the only thing that sways me. I wish the reason I asked the question of Don and Randy was they felt deep in their hearts, gut feeling, that was going to be developed over the years, both of those, because I see Hillsborough coming over this way to the freeway. Maybe let's make the city start developing both those properties at the same time, especially if they say the developers are going to pay the expenses of doing all the work. So that's my comment. It's not an easy decision for me, but that's why I'm leaning that way. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Rosenbaum.
No.
Representative Greenwood.
Aye.
Representative Doyle.
No.
Representative Ackerman.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Chair Garrard.
Aye. Representative Kitts, would you like to carry this bill? House Bill 3164 is passed, and Representative Kitts will carry.
As amended.
As amended. As amended.
Okay.
Okay, committee, well, I think what we'll try to do is get to 2912 and 2905, and then we'll tap very quickly anything else we have. As usual, nothing can be done quickly in this committee. Mm-hmm. So we'll open the public hearing on 2912.
Yes, Mr. Chair, House, members of the committee. House Bill 2912 establishes an Oregon Commission on Land Use Reform, specifies membership. It directs the commission to study strengths and weaknesses of the Oregon land use system and develop a list of recommended changes. It requires the commission to submit a report to the Legislative Assembly, the Governor, and the Land Conservation and Development Commission not later than November 1st, 2004. This bill, House Bill 2912, would sunset December 31st, 2004. It declares an emergency effective upon passage. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have one amendment before you. That's dash one amendment. And what that does is add one member to the commission and it increases the governor's appointment by one person, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. John Chandler. Morning, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler, Representative Advocates here on behalf of the Oregon Building Industry Association and House Bill 2912. I very much appreciate the committee hearing this bill. I think it's not just because it's one I'm putting forward. I think it's a very important piece of legislation. And in one of those wonderful bits of legislative timing, I think that the last bill you heard helped underscore some of the issues we're trying to get to in this bill. I'm handing out some written testimony that is... give some of the thinking behind this bill. A couple points I want to make about what the bill isn't. It does say Oregon Building Industry on it. It is not our bill in the sense that this is going to be a home builder bill in what often happens in this process. I see this, and I don't want, this is going to sound somewhat corny. This is a state issue. We happen to be the group bringing it forward. But we're not trying to drive a particular agenda here. We're not trying to drive any particular outcome. These issues that are called out for in 2912 are issues that I think are important, but I'm open to suggestion as to what this commission should do. I'm open to suggestion as to the makeup. Mr. Kelly mentioned the Dash 1 amendments coming from the counties, and I believe they are. Metro has some amendments that we had a miscommunication. They thought I was preparing them. I thought they were. I believe the Farm Bureau has some amendments. I understand the governor's office may have some amendments. I am open, folks, to how this works. I've never designed a commission of this, in my mind, of this magnitude. I fiddle with task forces off and on, as you all have. But this, our land use system is probably one of the most pervasive aspects of Oregon law. It is part of our background noise in our communities. You hear people in the grocery store talking about land use in Oregon. I don't believe there's another place in the country where that occurs. And it happens because we have inculcated so much of this over the years, the idea of urban growth boundaries, of resource preservation, of all the things that go with it. The problem, as I see it, is that we've done this for 30 years, but it's been 20 years since we actually had a conversation about why we were doing some of the things we're doing. And it's been a long time since we talked about what our objective is. I believe there's a great number of things we do in the land use arena where we do them simply because we do them. It's reflexive. It's not thoughtful. It's automatic. It isn't something that we have a strategy behind or a purpose behind. The last bill you heard, I think, I am taking no sides on that bill, but it highlights the issue. Some of the standards are vague. Some of the rationale behind the standards are obscure, and the implementation is not consistent. The system doesn't work well, as certainly not as well as it should, and certainly not as well as most of us who practice in it would like. What this bill attempts to do is to set up a commission. I'm open, as I said, to the membership of that commission with a couple of caveats that I don't think are mine. I think they're just the kind of natural ones. It shouldn't be too big or nothing will happen. It shouldn't have too many issues in front of it or nothing will happen. And the issues in front of it should be phrased in such a way that they are precise enough for the committee to know what it's supposed to do and when it's done doing it. The issues that we called out, are four that I believe are very important. The issue of farmland versus urban growth boundary expansion. As you heard in the last bill, and as you heard in other bills, and you'll hear in yet more to come, that is a bit of a grinding noise in this state. I have an opinion on it. That's not what this bill's about. This bill's about having a conversation of what are we going to do with regard to that issue. And I think it's high time that we talked about it and made a decision as a state what we want to do on that issue, and then go from there, rather than talk about the issue right next door to it and hope that somehow we jostle into the right public policy. That's one of the issues I think is very important. Another one of the four that I believe is critical is the issue of state versus local versus regional government. In Oregon land use, the counties have felt off and on over the last 30 years somewhat abused. Many times over those 30 years, the system has focused on rural issues, which tended to be county responsibility. They tended to be in the firing lines. The cities weren't as involved. Now, over the last 10 years or so, the system has been paying more attention to rural, to urban uses rather than rural. Doesn't necessarily have the right tools in place for that, which is part of this conversation, but also it means that we're affecting a lot more people. The arguments about local control used to be primarily rural issues, whether or not a county could zone land in such a way out in the Parker Brush someplace. Now we're seeing local control coming up on urban land use issues. I think we need to talk about that. If it's a state system with local implementation, if it's a local system with state oversight, all the various permutations we need to get on the table and hash out, because otherwise we're going to tie ourselves up in knots. The other two issues that I called out I think are important. I would submit they're probably less so. One is the role of the land use system on economic development, and that's not to make light of that. It's somewhat diffused, and perhaps we could tighten that up some. The other one is the appeals process and the fact that this has become, in so many, many ways, a lawyer's game. I am an attorney. I'm kind of a recovering lawyer. I don't actually practice anymore. But I don't think that my profession has helped Oregon land use particularly, because we have litigated every jot and tittle, and we've argued about the versus the, and I think that the governor, in fact, has said in his experience as AG and on the Supreme Court how many cases in front of him did not revolve around the merits of the dispute, but revolved around the procedures followed. I think that's an issue that needs to be on the table. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I really do believe this bill is important. I think it is critical past time for this issue to be discussed. I've tried in the drafting of this bill to be as non-judgmental, if you will, as non-directive about the outcome. I would be open, as I said, to amendments on structure and topics. I would welcome your input, frankly. I hope some of you will volunteer to serve on this commission when it's established. If you aren't on it, I hope you will watch it, because this issue, folks, Senator George put out a bill on to repeal land use in the state. I don't recall the number. Take a look at it just to see how thick it is. Just to see how many places in Oregon law, or as 197 is referenced. It is pervasive. It is throughout our legal system, our culture, our cities, our counties, and it is far too important to just keep it drifting the way it has been. We need to have a hard conversation with ourselves about what we want the system to do, how we want it to function, who we want to pay for it, and what outcomes we want when we're done. I think this bill will help get us there. It won't solve all the problems. It'll give us a context to get at them. And one final thing, Mr. Chairman, and this is by way of hopefully limiting somewhat, and I saw in the Farm Bureau testimony, and they'll speak to this as well, I worded the issue in here on urban growth boundaries as regards to farmland for one very specific reason, and this is just my own personal bias. I do not want to do secondary lands again. The rural land use issues regarding farmland and the uses thereof are, I believe, a whole conversation unto themselves. That may be the Farm Bureau's intention to have that added to this. I'm certainly open to that discussion. I'm trying to keep that one line there somewhat narrow on the urban-rural interface as opposed to the rural land issue generally. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will stop my testimony again. Thank you all very much for your attention and for hearing this bill. I'm looking forward to getting it structured and moving forward. If there's any questions, I'll be glad to try to respond to them.
I've just been informed that the House is requiring me to adjourn our public hearing and return to the floor of the House for a necessary vote. So,
well, there you are.
You were saved again, John.
Clean living is the key.
We will try to pick. We got to have a notice, but in 1 week, we will begin again on this bill with a session and plan to vote on it. So.
Can I ask you one question? Anybody against the bill?
The only one I've heard of is the League of Women Voters signed up as against. I have not spoken to them about their...
Ms. Frankel is here.
Okay, I just wanted to know if someone was against.
But I won't be able to take your testimony today, but we certainly will be interested in hearing what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. We will pick this up next Tuesday, and we'll plan a work session at that time. The time being, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2912. We're going to tap. We'll just open a public hearing on 2905. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2905. Representative Greenwich, we will give you an opportunity on this bill in 1 week because we have to put up the public listing. My apologies. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2984. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2984. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2614. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2614. Open the public hearing on House Bill 3181. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3181. Open the public hearing on House Bill 3408. And close the public hearing on House Bill 3408. Open the public hearing on House Bill 3527. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3527. Open the public hearing on House Bill 3558 and close the public hearing on House Bill 3558. Open the public hearing on House Bill 3395 and close the public testimony on House Bill 3395. Open the public testimony on House Bill 3315 and close the public testimony on House Bill 3315 and adjourn this meeting of the House Committee on Environment and Land Use.